The only social responsibility of business is to use its resources and engage in activities designed to increase its profits. So long as it stays within the rules of the game, which is to say, engages in open and free competition without deception or fraud. Not my words, the words of famed economist Milton Friedman from his seminal essay on the topic of social responsibility and what businesses should be responsible for and prioritize their time on. Now 50 years old, that essay, actually. And we've seen fluctuations in the understanding of businesses and its responsibility towards social impact over the years, and certainly in the last couple of years, more and more prominence of big organizations and corporations putting purpose, putting causes at the center of their focus, or at least pretending to do so. It's not always the case that it is really their number one priority. But I'm really interested in this topic, of course, and I've covered it at length on this podcast in the past. And as part of our original By Tradition series with the Glenlivet, which, of course, I'm glad you are participating in and, of course, want to hear your feedback on, I'm speaking to a really special guest today, Michael Barretta, who runs an agency called Dot Good, South Africa's leading cause-based marketing, or cause marketing and implementation agency. And their focus really is on helping organizations not just discover their purpose, but communicate that purpose effectively to their audience, to their employees, to various stakeholders, to the population at large. And I really wanted to tap Michael's brain to understand how he helps typically complex corporates distill their intentions in this space, how they incorporate that into their traditional marketing efforts, and how they ensure that really authenticity is held at the core of these efforts. Otherwise, they tend to fall flat. Michael's got a great story. He runs an incredible business. He was very generous with his time, and I trust you'll enjoy this conversation as much as I did having it. Without any further ado, Michael Barretta. Okay, Michael, thank you so much for taking time out of what I'm sure is a busy week to chat to me about Dot Good and a number of other things. There's this old adage in entrepreneurship that if you can solve a problem for yourself and you can build a business out of it, maybe you'll solve problems for other people. But you did something slightly different. You found your purpose, or you tell the story of exploring and in so doing, finding your, for lack of a better phrase, your why, and then building a business around that. So maybe I can tee you up with that as a start and hear a little bit more about where the idea for Dot Good came about and what has happened since then.
Yeah, amazing. Thanks for having me, Mike. Really, really appreciate it. It's so interesting that you say that. People ask me if I think I'm an entrepreneur, and I'm like, no, I'm just someone that's really passionate. And that's kind of how the way that I make money came to life. Quite a long story, but I'll try and keep it as short as possible. I was headhunted by the Creative Council, which, as many of you may know, was one of the biggest brand activation agencies in Africa, to come and work up here in Joburg. And I used to travel quite a lot for business, but I never really kind of got entrenched in Joburg. And what struck me was how much litter just really goes unnoticed in the city. And it kind of grated me at a fundamental level. And this was kind of almost a decade ago. So it's definitely got worse since then, unfortunately. And I really wanted to do something about it and to make South Africa a cleaner place, because litter is not just about environmental issues. It's about social psyche, I think, much deeper than just in environment. And at the time, we were working on Nokia, which was in its heyday as well. And they had an ambassador by the name of Dave Greer. And he did this incredible journey for a charity called Miles for Smiles, where he ran a marathon along the coastline of South Africa. And he did a little agency lunch. And I was just super inspired by his stories and moved by what he was saying and by how he kind of like put himself through all this physical adversity to make what he felt passionate about come to life. So I thought, why don't I do this, combine this idea of making South Africa a cleaner place with kind of this inspiration of cleaning up the coastline of South Africa. So I developed this campaign called Trekking for Trash, and I quit my job, and I sold my car, and we walked for 7 months collecting litter every day, myself and a trekking partner, Pamela Howard, and we engaged with communities and taught them about recycling and place recycling depots and created awareness of inland and coastal litter along the way. And I think through this journey, I realized that it is possible to build brands, drive sales, and do good all at the same time. And now a decade on, that's where we are, and .good has been thriving ever since.
Mike, I mean, you speak to South Africans every day who recognize issues around them, as you said, like trash is a good example of that. It's a, as you said, it's a social psyche. It's a representation of our level of self-respect and accountability. It's all of these things. What makes one person get up, sell their car, and go on this incredible journey to effect change when a lot of other people just look past it or hope that somebody else will fix it for them? Maybe there was something behind that. Is there something early on in your life that sparked that kind of activist instinct?
Yeah, I think my parents set a great example. They are like very activist in the environmental space. Like even before in Cape Town had their droughts, they would shower with a bucket underneath it themselves, and that would go into the garden, and they had their own little veggie patch, and everything that comes into the house is checked. Is it recyclable? Isn't recyclable? Mm-hmm. And we were privileged enough to be able to go to the coast often. And I think through that, I learned an appreciation for nature and the environment. And I think that that was kind of the springboard that took me into Trekking for Trash and then into .good. And we now work in various different aspects of social impact. So it's not just environmental anymore. And I'm sure a lot of listeners will be aware that South Africa has so many challenges, be it from employment to literacy to woman abuse. I mean, I think this country must have the longest list of challenges. And nothing will change unless people like us, because I know that you're a massive fan of South Africa as well, stand up, be counted, and say, this is who I am, and this is what I'm proud of, and this is how I want South Africa to be better. And brands are doing that, which I think is kind of so cool. And I think this is why our agency does flourish, is because they are seeing that private entities, so be it an individual or an organization, actually have the ability to make change, to do. And that can be from a kind of a micro space where around your kind of shop that you own in a township or in a village or whatever you want to make change in that space, or on a macro level, like a big corporate, like a bank or a retailer or whatever. And I think that as South Africans, through and through, we are proud, passionate, and resilience, and I think the riots are a perfect example of that recently, how people stand up and say, this is not how I want to be perceived, or this is not how I want to live.
So, Mike, you referred to the agency, and we're talking about .good. .good is a cause marketing-focused agency, and you know, people that are listening to the podcast might be familiar with that phrase and familiar with some of what we sweat, you know, brands that are focused around social impact. But it would be fair to say that there's a little bit of cynicism around that concept in the world at the moment. Brands that are attempting to take on a cause or stand up for a cause, but sometimes it seems a little bit disingenuous or, you know, sort of window dressing rather than a sincere commitment to changing the environment or community or setting that they operate in. So tell me how cause marketing in its best form is different from some of the greenwashing and woke washing or whatever it is that we want to call it that we've seen brands do in a fairly opportunistic way in recent times.
Yeah, so I think I'm going to be a little bit controversial here and say
please
I'm not anti-greenwashing. Yes, you want to be authentic, you want to be true to what you stand for, but I think the greenwashing comes from the knowledge that this organization should be doing something better. And I think by knowing is the first step to getting there.
You know, not so much about a malicious intent, but rather just a not deep enough understanding of what it actually means. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I think 100%. And a pressure coming from somewhere. And I'd like to think as consumers or society, we will in future keep organizations in check and say, right, this is no longer acceptable. You need to behave like this. So I see it as almost like a step in the right direction, as opposed mm-hmm. to like, look at me, get more consumers, because they will see that that is in fact what will happen, because we know that organizations with a strongly defined purpose do far better than their competitors. So if they start moving in that direction and then they see the commercial benefit, because ultimately organizations exist to make money, but they will understand that there's more to that if they go down that chain. If they don't, they'll never know. And so I'm not completely against greenwashing, but I think going back to your question about cause marketing. So cause marketing is generally driven from the marketing department. So there is restrictions in terms of promotional periods, because that's how the marketing calendar works. There'll be a set mm-hmm. budget that needs to be divided by a series of different quarters. But it's taking baby steps to activate or to bring to life that organization's purpose in action by making small changes in people's lives. And I'm not saying that every campaign is going to change the world. I'm really not saying that. But the more brands see that they can create relationships with their consumers that are mutually beneficial, the better for both parties. I hope that answered your question.
Yeah, sure. And I think it's a much broader definition or understanding or proposal for what cause-based marketing could be, rather than the simplistic way of thinking about just impact-led advertising necessarily, or whatever it might be that we tend to narrow these definitions down to. The skeptic in me, though, wants to kind of dig deeper into your conversation around us knowing that organizations that are led by a purpose doing better. And my instincts are that might be true, but that purpose is not always magnanimous. Sometimes that purpose is make as much money at the expense of people as possible. And so it's not always a purpose that we can aspire to or support. But it certainly is purposeful in the worst possible way. What I'm hearing you say, though, is that organizations that understand that they can be, and I think you said the three things together earlier on, you know, they can be profitable, they can be prolific, they can grow, and they can be purposeful, or nobody has to lose while they do that, are showing us that that is arguably the best way to run a business moving forward, regardless of your kind of philosophy on the topic. Is that accurate?
Yeah, I mean, I think that really does summarize it nicely. I think sometimes it's easier said than done.
Certainly.
In reality, because often you have shareholders and people that are putting a huge amount of pressure to make more money. But yes, essentially that's how I think it should operate. Because fundamentally, as a planet, we have limited resources. And to make sure that organizations, if you are using minerals in your production, we preserve those minerals to carry on making what you're making. Otherwise, you're going to run out and not be able to sell what you need to sell on a very simplistic level.
So how do you find these organizations then, or how do organizations that want to work with a specialist agency like yourselves find you? How does that relationship generally initiate?
So I think this is a great example of how your purpose attracts the right stakeholders. And through opportunities like this, where what I say kind of touches a nerve with a marketing manager or a marketing director, saying, well, you know, we really need to be thinking about how we can create mutually beneficial relationships with our consumers. We have a new business development manager does incredibly well in terms of reaching out to specific organizations who are really well placed in order to be able to use our services. So, I mean, great example are plant-based products or financial services that offer literacy and help to people who maybe aren't that literate, or fashion retailers that put a huge amount of emphasis in reducing the amount of water that they use in the production of their products, and that want to create other garments from recycled kind of jeans or whatever the case may be. So we see people, we see how they act out there, and we kind of say, listen, we see you, and we believe that we share the same philosophies, and we want to help you do better, because we want to see more organizations like yours last the test of time, as opposed to just focus on just making the money.
Mike, there's a sense that in the past, this component of an organization's strategy, if we can even call it strategy, was in a way outsourced to a corporate social investment program or department. And somebody who will not be named recently said to me that they got a sense that all the worst marketers in the business got put into that department sometimes. Certainly that was the way it was done years ago. And what we've seen is that this has been moved from essentially a department that we outsource our conscience to a strategic imperative that sits at the core of what the organization does. And I think in some ways the corporate ecosystem in South Africa has got some catching up to do in this regard, but certainly there's a level of maturity, you know, in my experience working with organizations in the UK and in the US around being a little bit more conscious about the connectedness of their impact and their profit. Talk to me about how the relationship with the brand for you changes if we had to compare it to a relationship with a typical agency or is what you're doing pretty much exactly the same? Are the services exactly the same, except you look at everything through the lens, the filter, if you like, of social impact?
Yeah, so I think maybe just to jump back to one of your points. So yes, I think South Africa has a long way to go in this. I know that Unilever does this incredibly well. They almost have created this hybrid between CSI and marketing. I do think that that is the future of the way that we communicate, because I don't think these two things can be done in isolation, particularly in South Africa, where the demand for help is greater than the ability to market yourself. So it's going to become this, I'll help you if you help me kind of dynamic, which will grow. So I think that that's a great case study in terms of how it happens. And I think you'll see that a lot of organizations will start following that. Mm-hmm. Another kind of layered challenge within our context is obviously BEE. So that is very much, and it sounds cliched, but a tech box. And so I think people are looking just in some instances just to kind of tick those boxes. Sure. But I do think that the consciousness is now starting to sink in that if you combine these efforts, we can make real impact whilst also better communicating who we are and what we want to do. And I think sometimes that's easier with brands that their consumers could be their beneficiaries, because then that's almost like a no-brainer. So some FMCG products that kind of sell to the bottom end of the market, very easy for them to create spaces and places that not only uplift, but also communicate. A little bit more complicated when you're dealing with high-end consumers in a non-environmental tone, because kind of that would be the go-to, because I think that you would hope that people in that LSM would understand that we have one planet and that's all we've got. But yeah, so it comes a little bit more tricky at that space. But definitely we've seen through the types of clients that have reached out to us, various different organizations are really trying to both change their ways, but also change the way that they communicate.
All right, a quick break and play. I hope you're enjoying the show, and I hope you're enjoying our Glenlivet Original Bike Tradition series. A wise man once said, we are what we repeatedly do. Excellence, then, is not an act, but a habit. For me, this is what being the original is really all about. It's a mindset. It's forward-looking. It's progressive. It's about not backing down to conformity or accepting mediocrity. It's about questioning norms, breaking assumptions. It's in the way that we combine resources creatively and use our talents in ways other people hadn't imagined. Ultimately, originality is really about people who are determined to do things on their own terms, redefining the way that we think about things like culture and success and achievement in the process. Originality is all about how we draw on our roots and show up winning again and again and again. A big thank you again from me to the team at Glenlivet for making these conversations possible. If you're enjoying the show as much as I'm enjoying recording it, please don't hesitate to share it with your network. And now, back to the podcast. There's this ongoing probably for too long, burning platform around the topic of measurement in the marketing space and the, you know, ascertaining the efficacy of spend and making sure that we can be accountable to senior stakeholders for the work that we do in this space and via various channels. Now, I'm sure that measurement comes up almost immediately in the conversation around cause marketing and marketing that is intended to have some sort of social impact, positive social impact. And I was shocked when I dived deeper into the world of social impact and social enterprises to understand just how mature the conversation around measurement is in the social impact world compared to the kind of traditional capitalist world. And I'm like, this is bizarre. Like, these people are doing really great work and are spending 30% of their time having to report back to funders with these incredibly mature measurement capabilities. And yet in the traditional entrepreneurship world, we do very little of that kind of work. So tell me how you think about measurement and how your clients have come to think about measurement through the work that you've done with them.
Yeah, and so that's a really interesting question. So I think what we always try and do is we try and apply two forms of measurement. So one is, what are your traditional ROI metrics that you want to achieve? And in most instances, we always propose solutions that would do the same as a traditional means of engagement. And then we say, right, on top of that, what short, medium, and long-term change do you want to make within the space that we've agreed to move forward in? And I think that depending on that space, your metrics will change. So is it health testing? Is it behavior change in terms of eating? Is it recycling? Is it understanding or literacy? And obviously it's quite easy in terms of the first point of contact is how many people. How many people have you done this with? But then also, you're right, it is incredibly sophisticated in terms of how much further you can take that. So what were the perceptions of, for example, a recycling project in terms of the cleaner environment? Tying back to our original discussion, did crime reduce in that area because it was kept tidy and there was less graffiti and there were less broken windows? Like, what are the other ripple effects that were seen from this engagement? And what we like to do as an agency is set those metrics or those sometimes quite soft things upfront and measure and track that so that we can report. And then at the end of any campaign or engagement, we would say, right, what worked, what didn't work, how can we do this better? And again, we then wear the two hats. How do we reach more people from a marketing perspective? And how do we help more people from an impact perspective as well?
Yeah, I love thinking about the combination of those two together. So in my experience running an agency, Michael, there were very rare occasions, maybe two that I can remember, where we decided not to work with a client right up front. But it was pretty drastic. it took quite something for me to go, I don't know if I could sleep at night knowing that I'm promoting this person's business. Because we promoted some interesting businesses. I imagine that, and maybe correct me if I'm wrong here, maybe part of the reason you exist as an agency is to help organizations discover their opportunity to make change, even if they aren't 100% focused on that imperative from the beginning. But how carefully do you select the clients you work with? You spoke about your business development manager's commitment to seeking out those types of relationships. Like, what is the profile, I guess, for the ideal client for a cause marketing business?
Yes, we have said no. We always say no politely. Also, we've said no to some of the NGOs that do fantastic work, but can't necessarily leverage the impact that we can give them. We saw that we were not, and this happened on a few occasions, not necessarily spending the money that they were paying us effectively. And that really frustrates us because fundamentally an NGO is intended to make impact, and we saw that they were wasting money. We said to them, listen, you know, we love what you do, But unless we can try and find a way to work together so that you can maximize the impact that we can give you, this isn't going to work for us. Because personally, that really, really grates me. Interesting story. I'm not going to mention any brands, but we work for a big FMCG client, and one of their products or brands came to us. That it's a sweet product, and that came to us and said, listen, we love what you're doing and we really believe and we want to drive with purpose, and this is our purpose. And I really did kind of subscribe to their purpose. I think it was fantastic. But my immediate reaction was, I don't want to work with a sweet brand. Like that's, you know, we work with sugar-free alternatives. We see the damage that sugar does. But then I thought, and with our strategist, we thought, this entity exists. It's here, right? We can't change that. But maybe we can change the way that they think or the way that they engage. So we developed a strategy that we believe helped them to, firstly, I think, use less plastic or more recyclable plastic, and then also to help create kindness in the world through incentive and reward. So it is a very thin line, and I think that as an agency, we need to be very careful about who we choose to take on board, because it's essentially our reputation that's on the line by saying yes to a client that we don't believe truly subscribes to a purpose and wants to make the world a better place. Because in this country, there are so many that do and are vested. So we'd rather choose to work with them.
Mike, we spoke on the phone, must be about 2 months ago now, maybe even further back than that. It's a terrifying thought. About this kind of vicious cycle, spiral, if you like, that exists in the intersecting worlds of advertising and communications, and specifically the non-profit or charity or impact-led business world. Because we've spoken, because of my inherent biases around brands and kind of profitable brands and seeking out purpose, but there's an interesting discussion to have around why NGOs don't advertise more. And you know, I've researched this and I spent a fair amount of time studying this in 2019. And you know, advertising, generally speaking, costs a lot of money. The resources that are allocated to creative work and content and planning are expensive resources. And what tends to happen is that agencies only take on NGOs, number one, if they can do the work pro bono. And generally speaking, that's because they want to win awards from it. Not always, but often. And second of all, they take them on only if they're like those really big names, you know, like Doctors Without Borders or the World Wildlife Fund or these massive NGOs that just by virtue of their momentum, they're juggernauts of kind of brand success already. And what happens is a lot of NGOs or purpose-led organizations that then do want to invest in marketing or advertising can only really afford substandard help or substandard resources. So they get a bad product, and what they start to believe is that advertising doesn't work for them, right? And then it kind of perpetuates this myth and so on and so forth. And, you know, we sort of tackled it. When I say we, I mean my cohort as part of my master's program try to solve this problem in our thinking was, how can we get impact-led organizations to think differently about advertising, and how can we get advertisers to think differently about impact-led organizations as clients? And obviously the problem in the middle is resources, is money. Talk to me a little bit about how you have not addressed or solved, but how you've kind of helped impact-led organizations and NGOs think about marketing and advertising in a different way.
Yeah, I mean, I love that you called it impact organizations and not-for-profits, and I think we did chat about that in our telephone conversation, because that's really how these organizations need to start viewing themselves. I mean, putting a non in your name is almost like creating a self-fulfilling prophecy to fail. That's much more fluid and much more progressive and much more forward moving. But I think maybe just to kind of jump back, we don't take on any NGOs as pro bonos. When we do our own purpose work, we won't really offer marketing or communication skills. We will rather go and build something or make something or dig something because, I'm sure working communication, you know that it sometimes feels quite intangible. We really like to have, you know, hard and fast things that we give back. And our agency is slightly different in terms of the fact that it's a below the line agency. So we specialize in behavior change and one-on-one engagement in terms of delivering results. So where I think that an agency such as ours is very different to an above the line agency where you're putting out a campaign and you're hoping that someone is going to respond to that messaging in a way that it was intended to do, our agency really sets clear metrics. And I'll use a great HIV AIDS testing program that we ran for Inova Health a while ago. They said, right, we need to test X 100,000 of men for HIV and AIDS in these areas, come up with a campaign or platform that does this. And we came up with this idea of these kind of semi-permanent pop-up stores based on the idea that these guys really don't like the tents on the side of the road. They really don't like going to the clinic. They don't like standing in queues with women. And we equipped these pop-ups with trained professional staff. And we literally went into the communities and we brought people back to the space to be tested. And it yielded one of the highest returns in terms of identifying HIV positive men, which was the goal of the project. So we had our numbers targeted in terms of how many needed to be reached and how many needed to be tested and then how many needed to be put on ARV. So it takes the guesswork away from hoping that a message is going to be interpreted. It's actually literally holding the hand of the, I'm going to call them a beneficiary in this case, not a consumer, to the store to get them tested. And then depending on what their status is, we give them the right advice after that or the help that they need after that. So I think that is the benefit of below-the-line engagement versus above-the-line engagements. And I think that sometimes the above-the-line agencies don't see below-the-line stuff as sexy because sometimes it is as simple as creating a permanent shop because I need to see it a few times before I actually go in there. Or I need to get stopped by the person here because this is the route I walk through every day to work to get pulled in. And that isn't going to work. And it never will. Although I have seen the lorries changing their tune a little bit this year around talking about good journeys and all that kind of stuff. But I think it really needs to start coming down to that measurable impact and less of that marketing or both. I mean, it needs to just be seen as a whole as opposed to one or the other.
Yeah, that was kind of where we landed, was leveraging one of the, well, in my humble opinion, dysfunctions of the industry, which is its, you know, kind of disproportionate reliance on awards as a way of demonstrating value and success as a lever point. So use those same awards, use the power that they have over client and agency leader thinking to potentially turn attention towards impact. And there is some of that happening, actually. Coincidentally, have seen organizations pop up overseas that are focused on exclusively on the efficacy of cause-based marketing initiatives and rewarding those accordingly. But I think it is something that will certainly happen in time as we become more and more aware of the interreliance and the interconnectedness of you know, kind of a broader view of impact and profitability and how they go hand in hand. So, Mike, you work with clients and specifically kind of, you know, corporate clients on a project type of basis, or do you mimic the kind of traditional agency retainer sort of model? How have you thought about kind of your business model, or are you essentially doing exactly the same thing, you know, but just under a different promise or measurable outcome?
Yes, I mean, we like to call ourselves output based. So I think I mentioned we would set a clear deliverable in terms of what it is that you want to achieve. And we work on a project by project basis. and prove ourselves over time. So we say, right, this is what we want to achieve with this engagement. When we reach and exceed it, then how do we take this project bigger or national or to a different sphere and make it really, really work? And I think it's also about building relationships with your clients, because it is quite unknown. How do I, as marketing director or marketing manager, change everything that the organization is doing? It's quite a big ask. And that fundamentally is what we're trying to do. We're trying to show that these things aren't mutually exclusive, but in fact mutually beneficial. And if that director can then take it to the CEO and say, look, this is what we've done on a micro scale. This is what our consumers are really asking for. This is the way of the future. This is what we need to be doing. We need to change our business, and then we need to talk about that again. And I think us in communications are generally the loudest. So people do hear us. People do hear what we have to say. And I think it is a good entry point to an organization to try and make that change internally.
So for brand custodians, marketing managers, people who are listening to this call that hold some responsibility for the efficacy of the communication of an organization, how — I've used the word efficacy about 17 times. I really need a new word for that particular the effectiveness, let's rather go with that one, of a communications ability to portray itself to its customers and in some cases to its beneficiaries. Mike, how would you hope that they start thinking differently? I mean, what books do you want them to read? What talks do you want them to watch? How do you wish brand custodians would think differently about the relationship between kind of purpose and communication?
Yeah, so you mentioned books. So Simon Sinek started Why. I think it's kind of the foundation of this type of thinking. They also various TED Talks that you could watch, and it's about authentically deciding what you stand for as an organization beyond making money. So and that can't be done in isolation. So that can't just be done by the marketing department. It's about —
the keyword there also is authentic, right?
Yeah. So I'm not going to mention any names again, but we sometimes just get calls from organizations, and they say, we want to go and do this, which is like just so unrelated to anything they do. We go, why would you be — so I'm trying to think of an example.
And not just why, but I mean, there's kind of a reputational or inherent crisis risk in doing that, right? Like it's sometimes such a schizophrenic attempt by organizations to, you know, pretend to be something that they just clearly are not.
Yeah, and it's so apparent to you as someone completely outside, but they just can't see it. And they'll be the same people that phone you in 4 months' time. And no, we want to go now, go do this. Because someone in our organization wants to do this.
Yeah.
And I'm like, this is not doing anything for that organization, that cause, that beneficiary. And it's also definitely not doing anything for you.
So
it's about adding value in a space or place that you can, that also adds value to who you are as an entity. And I think that it really personifies that relationship. So it needs to be mutually beneficial, because if it isn't, the next person who moves in is going to say, oh, no, my aunt went to this orphanage and it was really cute and we need to go and give money to that. You need to be equipped with the things to say, no, this is what we stand for as an organization. This is what we've done for the organization over the last period, whatever that period is. And this is what we believe that the relationship is also doing for us as an organization and for our consumers or our stakeholders, whoever they may be.
How do people find you? Where do they find you online? What are the right URLs to visit?
So check us out at our website. I think it's the best place to go. There's some really nice case studies, various different industries, various different sectors, for-profits and commercial. And that is www.good.co.za, or check us out on Facebook as well. And then on our website, there's a contact page. And anyone who's listening wants to reach out, feel free to email me at michael@dotgood.co.za. And I will definitely hit you an email back.
That is amazing. Michael, thanks so much. Thanks for the work that you're doing. Thanks not just for the work that you're doing, but also the lessons, hopefully, that you're imparting. I think a key point out of today's conversation is that it's not always around finding the perfect opportunity or the perfect client to do this work with, but sometimes it's about changing mindsets and changing priorities in a subtle, caring, and, you know, kind of non-invasive way. And in so doing, that's often where the, you know, the longest or most meaningful impacts often are. So thanks for doing that work. I know as a fellow South African, as an entrepreneur, as an impact, a believer in the value of impact, I think we're very grateful to you.
Awesome. Thank you so much for the opportunity, Mike.
Cool.
You've been listening to the One-Eyed Man podcast. I'm Mike Stopforth, an entrepreneur, writer, and public speaker, deeply curious about discovering better ways to lead and better ways to live in an increasingly complex world. I find the best source of these ideas is the experience and wisdom of interesting people who are taking unconventional approaches to solving the world's most compelling problems. If you'd like to hear from someone I haven't yet spoken to, visit mikestopforth.com, click on the podcast link, and send through your suggestions. A big thanks to the Solid Gold Podcast Studios in Johannesburg, South Africa, for making this production possible. And remember, in the land of the blind, the one-eyed man / person is king.
You've been listening to another production from Solid Gold Podcasts.